The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach. Recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 2.
Secret teachings work only because of emptiness, and they're based on an understanding of emptiness, but that's something that's secret. So that's the benefit of it. If in this life you can make hook up with this thing for like 20 minutes, your suffering would be ended. You would never have a bad day again, you would never be unhappy again, you would never have any kind of negative emotions again. Your body ultimately would never die again. You would change, the body would change into a body of light, and your world would change. You would enter a Buddha paradise. These are the benefits of making direct contact with ultimate reality. Can you do it? Yes. It just requires proper training. Is it easy? No. Can you think you might have done it and you're not sure? No. Okay? Seriously, no. Many people ask me, they say, well, I was meditating one time and I felt a little giddy and something happened and there was this whoosh and a yellow light and was that it, you know? And no, when it happens, you'll know it. Very, very, with absolute certainty, you will know it. There's no doubt about it. And certain things happen to everyone who sees emptiness directly. You will see your future lives. You will meet a Dharmakaya of the Buddha directly. You will have a lot of other special realizations, for example, about the nature of a diamond and things like that. And then those are many things that happen, and you can confirm it by talking to someone whether or not they have. And one thing you know that you've done it, and there's no question that you've done it. It's called sema, pramana. You know that you've done it. There's a certain kind of perception you have that is undeniable, even to yourself. Okay. What happens? I want to describe a little bit what happens going into that experience, okay? And it relates to today's lesson. There are certain conditions that come before you see emptiness directly. I'll name some of them, okay? One of them would be, for example, you have found a good teacher. You are studying with that teacher very deeply. You are collecting immense amounts of good merit, good virtue, good karma, okay? You are serving that teacher. Maybe you're building the teacher a house. Maybe you're taking care of their medical needs, teaching them languages, stuff like that. Whatever they need, you're doing. And that is the most effective way to build up the energy that you need to see emptiness directly. You must find some very important virtuous thing and then serve that master. And then the good karma starts to come very, very quickly. Then you must be studying emptiness intellectually. You know, you must be hearing a lot of classes about it. You must be getting a lot of instruction in it over and over again. You must be meditating deeply. You must be meditating 1 to 2 hours a day and able to go into a deep state of meditation. These are all requirements. The final instructions you get would relate to mental images. And I'm not going to go into that now, but the final instructions you would get, and we'll talk about it later, something called Chichedak, and something about the nature of how the mind creates mental images. And all of these things are building up to this crescendo. And you start having extraordinary realizations even before the day that you see emptiness directly. For example, you would start having profound understandings of the nature of impermanence. Okay, impermanence and emptiness are different things. But you would start to have deep understandings of the subtle nature of impermanence in the few days before you see emptiness directly. That's an example. But other things are happening mentally. You're having extraordinary spiritual realizations are happening to you constantly going into that process. Then let's say it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, you're standing there, you know, it's a summertime, something like that, and you're standing watching, you're making a pot of tea for your lama, you know, you're making a cup of tea, and you put the water in a pot, and you put the pot on the stove, and you're standing there looking at the pot, you know, and you're about to go into the temple to do your meditation, you know, you're about to go to your meditation place, and you're standing there looking at the pot. And you realize that you're not looking at a pot, okay? There's something happens to you. And you realize that you're only looking at parts of a pot, okay? You're only looking at some white color, some black, long thing. You're only really seeing shapes and colors. There's no pot, okay, if you think about it. All the eye is capable, the eye doesn't see pots. Your eye can only see colors and shapes. It's your mind that organizes the pot. Okay? That's pretty simple so far. Okay? Your mind is seeing some circle part and some long part, and the circle part is kind of got white color on it, silvery color, and the long part has a black color, and there's only this colors and shapes being reported to your mind by your eye consciousness, okay? Your eye is looking at the pot, and it's seeing some details, and it's not yet calling it a pot, okay? It's just seeing some colors and shapes. You can buy that, right? That's not, it's a little weird, but you have to think like that, okay? Your eye doesn't see pots. Your eye only sees colors and shapes, and it reports those colors and shapes to the mind. Then the mind has to decide what's going on. The mind has to make sense about it, make sense of it, okay? Then those information gets sent to the mind, and the mind is organizing that shape, that clues, you can call them clues, okay? It's getting hints. This is round, this is wide, this is long, this is black, and it says, I think pot, I think it's a pot. And then the mind makes a picture of a pot. And when you look at a pot on the stove, this is what happens to you. You're looking at the pot, and suddenly you realize that you're not looking at a pot, you're looking at a mental image of a pot that's in your mind. Okay? And you never were looking at a pot in your whole life. Okay? It's something very profound. You know, you figure out that you are watching a perfect, tiny, mental picture of a pot. Because there's no picture out there of a pot, there's just some colors and shapes. There's just some random colors and shapes almost. Round, silver, black, long. And then your mind is like organizing this and into a little picture. And you're watching the picture in your mind and saying, pot, pot. Okay? That's what they call imputation, labeling, whatever you want to call it. But this is what's really going on. Projection, it doesn't matter what you call it. Your mind is organizing this data into something. And at that moment, for the first time in your millions of life, you know, countless lifetimes, you have seen emptiness or not. It's not emptiness, okay? You just caught yourself, you just realized what deceptive reality was for the first time, okay? You didn't even get to emptiness yet. You see what I mean? You just realized how you're creating reality for the first time ever. You caught yourself watching deceptive reality, deceptive truth. That's deceptive truth. That is the moment that you establish the meaning of deceptive truth. And that's the first time you ever figure out that it was deceptive. You're not watching a pot on the stove. You're watching a picture of a pot in your mind. Okay? And it's like a big step. You're about to see emptiness directly. You know, you're like an hour away. But you just saw what? Deceptive reality? Deceptive truth? Is that the first time you ever saw deceptive truth? Huh? No, it's your life, okay? Your mind, your body, your mother, your father, your house, your job, your boss, New York City, America, the moon, the sky. It's all deceptive truth. You've been watching deceptive truth your whole existence. That's all your thoughts. Everyone you ever met. That's deceptive reality. But you just figured it out that it's deceptive for the first time. You just saw deceptive truth as being deceptive for the first time. It's a big threshold. You know, it's a big threshold. It's called Jorlam Trusamul Tsuba Chuchok. Chuchok means it's the peak moment in your existence before you cross into seeing emptiness directly. Okay? Chuchok means the final moments of your zillions of lives to where now you finally understood what you were doing for the first time. Okay, you saw deceptive truth as deceptive truth. You saw deceptive reality as being deceptive reality, and that's the first time ever, directly. Okay, like you can understand it when I talk about it now, but you're not seeing that deceptive reality is deceptive. It'll happen someday. You have to have all those other conditions. Big time virtue. Do you have to have the five perfections? No. But big time virtue, really intense virtue, okay? You must be like creating incredibly powerful karma by serving the Dharma or something like that. You know, you must be doing that, and by studying deeply and by meditating deeply. And all that crescendos up to this moment. You're standing there, you're looking at a pot, and it's, you see it for what it is for the first time. That's the recognition of deceptive reality. Then you're like freaked out for a few minutes, and then you stop. You know, you go ahead and make the tea, you deliver it to your lama, you go into your meditation room, and you go into a deep state of meditation. And then because of all those conditions, you see emptiness directly. What does it feel like? You cannot be aware of yourself. Why? Your deceptive reality. Okay? You belong to the lower reality. You see? The person seeing emptiness belongs to the lower reality. So you cannot have the thought, I'm seeing emptiness. Because that's a lower reality. Okay? It's just a pure, direct communion with emptiness. You know? And you're not aware of anything except emptiness. Your mind cannot have a conceptual thought at that time. Impossible. Okay? Cannot do it. And just before that, you went into a meditation where your sense consciousness is shut down. You know, you're not hearing anything anymore. You can't taste anything anymore. You can't smell anything. You can't see anything anymore. Your mind is in shamatha. It's in deep, single-pointed meditation. And then you go into the direct realization of emptiness. And you cannot also mark the passing of time. Because that's another deceptive reality. You cannot have a perception of a deceptive reality at that moment. When you come out, you don't know how long it's been. You know, it happens to be like 15, 20 minutes, okay? Then you start to come down. You have a physical sensation of coming down, which is not coming out of emptiness, but it's coming down from that state of concentration, which is required to see emptiness. And then a lot of other things happen. A lot of other things happen during that day. And I'm not going to go into those things. Maybe later, okay? But the point is, within an hour or something, on the front end of the hour, you saw deceptive reality for what it is. On the back end of that hour, you saw ultimate reality for what it was. And so you've finally seen the two truths, okay, directly, for what they are. That 20 minutes of seeing emptiness directly has the power to allow you to remove your mental afflictions. Like in time, with time, you will be eliminating your mental afflictions forever. You'll not get angry again. You'll not be jealous again, and like that. If you're on a bodhisattva track, you'll start. By the way, if you're on a bodhisattva track, right after that, you have a direct experience of bodhicitta. Okay, and that's another story. I won't go into that. But that's what it is to. That's what it is. In 20 minutes, you've just gained the ability to reach enlightenment, and you see your future enlightenment, and you know that you'll be enlightened, and you know how long it will take, and it's short time. It's not long, and it's some extraordinary emotion that comes from knowing that. Like you can never really worry again in your life at all. There's nothing anyone can do to hurt you or help you much after that. You're just finished, set, called a stream enter, okay? And that's what the whole purpose of Buddhism is. At that moment, you understand directly the entire contents of the scriptures. There's 200,000 Tibetan scriptures. In that moment, you understood all of their contents, you know, in 20 minutes. I mean, you will spend the rest of your life, you know, living in those scriptures and keeping them because you realize that they're very precious for other people. But you just understood all of them, you know. It's very interesting. Anyway, that's the experience of emptiness. When you switch over to that other kind of person that you are after that, it's a very weird existence. You know, nobody can tell you anything. You get very stubborn, right? I mean, you know how your life is going to go, and you know how things are going to be like, and you know how your enlightenment is going to be, and your course is clear. And you also, if you're on a bodhisattva track, you know exactly how you're going to serve other people, and you know that you're going to commit your life to serving other people, and you know you probably won't do anything else, actually. And preserving the Dharma, trying to keep the Dharma alive in the world, especially the books, because they're all true. At that moment, you realize that every single word in every single scripture is absolutely true. And so it becomes an obsession to save these things in the world, that they shouldn't be lost in the world. There's a couple of words to use to describe that kind of person. So I'm going to give you those because they're on your homework, okay? Just write the first one, okay? Sure?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
When you say emptiness, you say you have sacrificed to God, you know you're going to be for sure. You still have your mental afflictions. You haven't gotten rid of your mental afflictions.
Go ahead. Well, any more questions? Because I want to answer it all in one shot.
Okay. So the question is, are you actually the experience of having a mental affliction, does that mean it compels you to move a certain path, or is it a free choice in the sense that you realize certain things and you realize you have a mental affliction and you choose, say, well, I don't know, for lack of a better word,
right. Are you talking about a person who's seen emptiness directly?
Yeah.
Okay. Nina asked this. Do you, right after you see emptiness directly, do you destroy all your mental afflictions? And if not, then for a person who's seen emptiness directly, when a mental affliction comes, how do they handle it? Is it like they have more power to direct it a certain way or refuse it a certain way or beat it up a certain way or something like that, okay? You only lose 3 mental afflictions permanently the day you see emptiness. We talked about it last week. Doubt about the Buddhist path. I mean, you can't meet a Dharmakaya directly and see all your future lives directly, you know, and see your own enlightenment directly and ever doubt Buddhism again, you know, seriously. And also see that you're not crazy. You see, all of these things happen. Forget it. Buddhism is perfect, absolutely perfect path that works, and it leads you to enlightenment. And you can never, ever can anyone make you have the slightest doubt about it, because you saw it directly. Period. You know, someone come up to you and say, the sky's not blue, you say, you know, okay, you know, who cares? You know, I mean, I saw it, you know. You don't have any, you cannot ever have doubt again about Buddhism. First thing. Second thing, you cannot believe, what should we say? You lose your tendency to believe that things are self-existent, intellectually, forever. If somebody comes up to you and says, are your perceptions correct? Is the world the way it looks like? You say, no, never. The world is not the way it looks like. Every single perception I have is wrong. Every single way I think about the world is wrong. And you know it, okay? But you can't stop doing it yet, okay? The day that you stop doing it is the day you reach nirvana, okay? In the highest school, the day that you stop seeing things as self-existent is the day you reach nirvana, because it is the most subtle mental affliction. And when you destroy your last little inch of mental afflictions, you've reached nirvana. That's what nirvana is. So you don't have that one. You know, intellectually, you know that you're seeing everything wrong. But when you come out of the direct experience of emptiness, you start seeing them wrong again, and you know what you're doing. It's like watching your, it's like a schizophrenia, you know? You're like, hey, you're wrong. Yeah, I know. Well, why don't you stop it? I can't do that just yet. You know? And you know? It's like that. You know you're wrong, and you can't stop it. Hang on one second. And the third one is, you can no longer believe in silly religious practices, like hurting your body would help you to get into nirvana or something like that, or going out and sitting in the snow for 3 hours is important practice, or things like that. It's, you know, any thing that would involve immorality, or anything that would involve hurting yourself to get to some spiritual goal, you realize it's totally crazy. I mean, anything that's not consistent with the Buddhist path, you realize is not useful. And those are three mental afflictions, and those are the only three. You still have the other 83,997 varieties of screwed up thoughts in your mind. Okay, and it takes a period to get rid of those. Now, what happens to, how does a person who's seen emptiness directly handle their mental afflictions differently than a person who hasn't seen emptiness directly yet? That's a whole nother story. How do they use emptiness to stop mental afflictions? We'll talk about it. We'll be talking about it. Okay. There's times still when they're out of control. There's still times when they can't stop themselves from having a mental affliction. Otherwise, they would already be achieved nirvana.
Definite. It seems like something compels you to do certain things. Yeah. And since you have the mental afflictions, most likely also will be prone to.
Yeah. No, you still be compelled. Yeah, you would still be compelled to do bad deeds. Yeah, not at all. Yeah, no, you would still collect bad karma, but it would never go off. Requires ignorance to go off. We'll talk about it. Okay, you can no longer collect the bad karma that would project a new life. Okay, but you're still wearing out old bad karma, which is going to project no more than, or no, typically 7 lifetimes. Okay. Committed to what?
Is there a way that you can say you can have 7 lives and maybe 100 lives?
No, it's, you see the future directly. Okay? Scripture says so. I can show you.
Yeah, not
okay.
Me.
Yeah.
Just
yeah. No, that's the way it happens to be. And if you practice the secret teachings faster. Period. It always works that way. Okay? Yeah. Very brief, okay? Because we...
Was that second mental affliction that you mentioned that's removed at that point, the same thing you referred to last class as jikata?
As what?
Jikata, to the view of destruction.
No. 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 No, no. No. It is the intellectual jikta, but not the inborn jikta. Okay? It's an intellectual form of jikta. Intellectually, you know you're wrong.
So jikta is not the same thing as...
It is, but it has two flavors. Inborn one, which even bugs and germs have, and the intellectual one. You, at that point, can never again have the intellectual flavor. But you can definitely, and you do have the inborn one. The day you get rid of that is the day you reach nirvana. Okay? Okay, what makes a pakpa? Pakpa in Sanskrit is Arya. Hitler used the word for superior person. It is a Sanskrit word that means a superior person. Of course, Hitler used it totally, absolutely, totally the opposite of what it really means. Arya means a person who is superior or a person who is higher. Why? They have seen emptiness directly. They have seen ultimate reality directly. And this, you have to get this, okay? There's only two kinds of people in the world. I compare it to virginity, okay? I mean, you either are or you're not. You know, there's no other possibility. And you lose it at a certain point, okay? I mean, you can look at your life as a long string, and you can pinpoint the day that you changed to the other way, permanently. You know, you either one or the other. And Arya and non-Arya is exactly the same. You either seen emptiness directly, or you haven't seen emptiness directly. People who have are totally, absolutely different from other people. Okay? They're on their way out. After countless lives, after countless years of effort, they've drawn a line, and they're on their way out. They know everything directly. You know? And then there's other people we call common people or regular people, haven't seen it. And you have to think of the whole universe as populated by only two kinds of beings. Have you seen emptiness directly yet, or haven't you? And that's Arya or non-Arya. And that's the meaning of Arya. Okay? It becomes extremely important to you at that point. And the ones who are Aryas, unless you're surrounded by some kind of emanation, are extremely rare. Okay, frankly, if one person during a given generation could see emptiness directly, it would be very special. You know, it's extremely rare. It doesn't mean that without correct training you can't do it, but it's extremely rare. Okay, it's extremely difficult. But you have to try, okay? And you have to get the right conditions. You can have all the conditions, but it's not a common thing. Okay. What makes an Arya is Tongyi, Nonsundu, Tok, Nyong. Is the Buddha an Arya? Oh, we'll check. Write this second one. Say Tongyi, Nonsundu. Tongyong. Tongyi. Munsumdu. Tongyong. Tongyi means emptiness. Okay? Tongyi means emptiness. Tongbanyi. Shunyata. Munsumdu means directly. Munsumdu means directly. In a deep state of meditation. The claims that you could have an directive experience of emptiness without being in a deep state of meditation are false. You cannot. It's impossible. There's no such thing. Perhaps when those experiences are described, they may be talking about the direct understanding of deceptive reality. But, you know, reports that you can be chopping wood or something like that and see emptiness directly are impossible. And there's no scripture in the world that says that. There's no scripture that was spoken by the Buddha that said anything like that. You must be in a deep state of meditation. In fact, it's a certain part of the first dhyani level of the form realm called Michogme. You actually have to be in that particular meditation to see emptiness directly. It's impossible in any other condition. Okay, yeah.
Do you have to see deceptive reality in a non-meditative state?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would say you could be in a meditation and see it. Yeah. She asked if you could see deceptive reality for what it is, directly. If you say deceptive reality directly, well, you're doing it all the time, right? As for what it is directly, I'd say it's theoretically possible. Yeah.
Could you to be the one loser to see deceptive reality and not see empty destruction?
I don't believe that the impetus that takes you up to Jorlam Chuchok, which is the last moment before you see emptiness directly, the final hours before, I don't believe that the karma that got you there could not take you over the top.
You know, I don't know that for sure.
I don't think it's possible to stop at that moment. I don't think it's possible. You know, I don't think the karma to die, for example, could intervene at that moment. Okay? Okay, yeah. Say again? She asked if there are people born real life. You have to take seven more lives. I mean, that's a very typical. So as a child, you would be a person who had already perceived emptiness directly. Would you remember it? Not necessarily until you reach a certain age where you can conceptualize things properly. But you do reconnect with that realization at a very early age. And one of the details that you perceive is that throughout your future lives, you'll be surrounded by very, very competent spiritual teachers. You know, you will never want for a spiritual teacher during those seven lives. They will be around you constantly, like the way the Dalai Lama was brought up or something like that. I mean, from the time you're an infant, you will be surrounded by spiritual teachers. And then at a very early age, you will reconnect with that experience. Okay. Okay. Tony is emptiness. Lunsumdu means directly. By the way, it's not impossible to achieve Buddhahood in that same life before you die, and the secret teachings are for that, you know, and they work. Okay. Dongni means emptiness. Lunsumdu means directly. Tok means to perceive, to realize. Nyong means has done it, has experienced that. Okay, that's the description of what an Arya is. That's the description of what a Pakpa is. A person who has undergone the direct experience of emptiness. Okay? That's what an Arya is. In the early days of your Aryaness, you're called a Gyunshuk. Nina. No joke. Do three prostrations fast. Okay? Okay. Ginchuk means stream mentor. And what it means is you're on your way out of suffering, period. Okay? It's like stream mentor means you're on your way out. And there's no doubt. You've reached the point where you're on your way out. And you know it. And that's called stream mentor. So you've heard the expression stream mentor. And that's what it means. Is it the same as Arya? There's Arya's. Aryas are always stream enterers or have been stream enterers, but you go beyond stream enter. There are three other stages you go through as you reach nirvana. And so this describes the early part of your Aryahood. Okay? What do we call people who haven't seen this thing directly? Yeah. Either one or the other. Either a Pakpa, which is an Arya. By the way, I used to always mix up Arya and Arhat. I don't know, you know, if you're just starting your study, you're probably going to mix them up too. Arya means a person who's seen emptiness directly. Arhat means a person who, because they saw emptiness a long time ago, were able to stop all their mental afflictions, and now they've reached nirvana. Okay, that's what Arhat means. So Arhat comes way after Arya. Okay, unless Time magazine is right when it says that nirvana is really cooler than enlightenment, but that's another thing. Okay, say so. Kia wo. I'm sorry. Did you have a question?
Did you say before that the rarity of an Arya is one to a generation?
Well, I'm just saying it would be. I don't want to be pessimistic, and I want you all to see emptiness directly.
That's what I felt.
But it would be very it would be more important than anything which ever happened in the United States if one person in this room saw emptiness in their lifetime. Yeah. Let's put it like that. It happens once in a generation, maybe, or something. I mean, the goal is that we increase that number. You know what I mean? But it's very difficult. And your karma has to be very, very good. And you have to really, really undertake those activities that I mentioned in a very sincere way. Especially learning about emptiness and also collecting good karma. And the good karma that you need, frankly, the most powerful object is a spiritual teacher, you know, to serve a spiritual teacher. This is taught throughout Buddhism. And it sounds like suspicious, especially if the spiritual teacher is telling you that. But it is true. And I don't mean with money or flowers or anything like that, with your life and with your practice. You know, what they really want out of you. They have no need of money. You know, a person who's reached that has absolutely no need of anything you can give them in material sense. They want your practice. You know, they want you to develop compassion. They want you to see emptiness directly. That's the offering. That's the highest offering. And to truly serve them and offer them that, which is your life, that's the karma I'm talking about. Okay. Say soso kiwo. Soso means soso. Soso means regular old dude, you know, plain old person. You can call it like an ordinary person. Okay, kiwo means person. So soso kiwo means a normal person, regular person, a non-arya, someone who has not perceived emptiness directly. Okay. In Sanskrit, it's pratajñāna. A synonym is chiba. Chiba means a child, okay, an infant, actually. It's like, I forget, there's an outline of the stages of child development. I think it's between 2 and 4 or something like that. It's an infant, okay. That's another word for a person who hasn't seen emptiness directly. Tsurtong. Say it, tsurtong. Tsurtong. I'll let you write it. Tsur means... Tsur is the opposite of par. You had par and paru to chimba. Tsur is the opposite of paru. Paru means the other side. And tsuru means this side. Like the other side of a river and this side of a river. Okay? And tsurtong means people who only see this side. Okay? And it means like nearsighted or something. It means they haven't seen emptiness yet. We searched 115,000 pages of scriptures today to see if anyone ever explained why exactly what near means, nearsighted. And there was just a few references. It is always listed as a synonym for soso kiwo, but exactly why they call it nearsighted, it seems to be... I forget. Do you guys remember? Anyway, we'll let you know later. Something that they're only seeing in this way, and they don't see ultimate reality. They're only seeing relative, what we call deceptive reality. Okay? Like that. And the only difference between an arya and a non-arya is this little syllable here. If you don't want to write out the whole thing, just put ma dot dot dot. Okay? Dongni ngunsum tu tok manyong. Manyong means a normal person, a regular person, is a person who has not seen emptiness directly. Okay. So the rest is the same as what you just wrote down before. Just this one change. Before nyong, you put ma, which means not. Have not had a direct experience of emptiness. Is the direct experience of emptiness the same for all people? I mean, if person A sees emptiness directly, and person B sees emptiness directly, and a Buddha sees emptiness directly, which they're doing all the time, by the way, okay? Is it the same? Does it feel the same? Okay? Is there any difference between different people who see emptiness directly? Not one iota. Okay? Exactly the same. You either see it or you don't. And if you do, you see it 100% pure, absolute, direct perception of ultimate reality. And you can't have a 95% perception of it or 33% perception of it or anything like that. Some lower schools say there's different degrees of emptiness. The higher school says forget it. You either see it or you don't, and if you see it, your direct experience of emptiness is exactly the same as the direct perception of emptiness by any other being in the universe, period. Because it's only that. It's only the direct communion with emptiness. Okay? And your lousy first moment of Arya perception of emptiness is qualitatively exactly the same as an enlightened being's direct perception of emptiness. Because you either see it or you don't. And when you see it, it's 100% that, period. Okay? Does that mean that all people who have seen emptiness directly are the same? No. Okay? There's 10 bodhisattva levels that start the day you see emptiness directly, if you're on a bodhisattva track, what they're called bodhisattva bhumis. Okay? There's 10 different stages that you have to get through to become a Buddha. Okay? Those begin the day you see emptiness directly. So the person who's at stage number 2, which is the second bodhisattva bhumi, the second bodhisattva level, they obviously have a much more advanced state of mind than the people at the first level. Are these people advanced? Yeah, like one in a zillion maybe. Okay? They've seen emptiness directly. But when you get to bodhisattva level 2, you actually outshine the people at bodhisattva level number 1. Okay. If a person at bodhisattva level 2 sees emptiness directly, is it any different from the perception of direct perception of emptiness by somebody at bodhisattva level number 1? No, no difference at all. You either see it or you don't. If you see it directly, that's it. There's nothing more to say about it. But the rest of their mind is much more advanced. You know, their experience of the six perfections is much more advanced. And specifically, they have gained certain mastery over the perfection of giving, for example. Okay, they've like their understanding or their practice of generosity is much higher than the practice of generosity by a person at the first bodhisattva level. And it goes like that. Okay? So if the homework says this is how I get people to pay attention. Does everybody see it the same? Yes. Does that mean all their mind states are the same? Not at all. Okay? A first day Arya's mind level and a Buddha's mind level are totally different. Okay? But their experience of emptiness is the same. So, they say in Buddhist philosophy, and Master Shantideva and Gyaltsebje in these readings will be describing how each one puts down the one below it. Each experience, in a sense, disproves this experience below it. For example, the lower schools of Buddhism, there's a school called those people who think that things that work exist truly. And the beliefs that they have are disproved by people belonging to the Madhyamika or the Middle Way school. And inside the Middle Way school, those who've seen emptiness directly, their life disproves the lives of others. They call it disproves, okay? It just means it just shines 10 zillion times stronger than the people below them. And then those on the second bodhisattva level, their lives and their state of mind are totally outshine those on the first level. And like that. So there's this pecking order. And Gyaltsebje and Master Shantideva, they get into the pecking order. Why? The people at the bottom of the pecking order don't understand emptiness. The beliefs that the people at the bottom... Okay? And a lot of what we're going to do now, starting now, is describing a bunch of wrong ideas about emptiness. And then we'll get to... If I can describe to you successfully why they're wrong, you won't have that mistake, and then you can see emptiness faster. Okay? You can skip that stupid idea and go to the next one. What's the stupidest idea you can imagine? Oh, emptiness means nothing. You know, emptiness and black space are the same. Close my eyes, imagine black space. That's emptiness. That's stupid idea number one. We're not even going to talk about it. Okay? Stupid idea number two. Emptiness is the absence of all things. You know, I'll just close my eyes and pretend that my boss, my wife, my house, my city, the subways, Mayor Giuliani, and everything else don't exist. You know, and that's emptiness. No, you will do it. You know, in your meditation, when you try to imagine emptiness, you'll start doing something like that. And that's not emptiness. How about ultimate lousy emptiness meditation? The worst one, okay? The worst of the worst, all right? Oh, everything's empty, so I can do whatever I want. There's no morality. There's no good deeds. There's no bad deeds. I'm above all that. I saw emptiness directly. I'm a tantrika, you know? I can do all those bad deeds. I'll convert them into goodness, you know? I'll do any kind of weird bad deed, and it'll be okay, you know, because I'm a tantrika who, I understand emptiness, you know. This is like, Jetsun Kapa says, that's like going to the Kansas and destroying every, all the corn in Kansas, and then putting some kind of toxic waste on the ground that made sure that it could never grow again, you know. He says, those beliefs are very similar to that, you know. To think that there's no good deeds and no bad deeds because everything is empty is the ultimate stupid idea. We'll get into that one a little bit tonight, okay? But these are all, like, these don't even count in the pecking order. These are like down here as, I think they're kind of like American or Western or, you know, some people in Tibet had that too, very few. But it did come in Tibet, you know, these really stupid ideas about emptiness. So they don't even deserve to be talked about seriously, okay? We just leave them, all right? What do you call the people? Let's get some more sophisticated wrong ideas. Say Ngopor? Mawa. Ngopor? Mawa. Got it? Not yet. Ngopor means, generally speaking, it means a thing. More specifically, in Buddhist philosophy, it means a thing that does anything. Is this a ngupo? Yeah, why? You can write with it, okay? Is the car a ngupo? Yeah. Is the pew a ngupo? Yeah, you can sit on it. You know, are my fingers ngupos? Yeah, they do something, you know. Is a fire a ngupo? Yeah, you can burn your toast with it. You know, like that, okay? I mean, that proves they're ngupos. They do something. Anything that does something is a ngupo. Ngupo means, I'll get to the ra later. Mawa means they profess something about ngupos. They say something about ngupos. You can call them ngupoists, okay? I call them functionalists, okay? I call them functionalists. They believe something about things that do things, okay? They say something about things that do things. What do they say? Ngupo here means a thing that does something, like a car, a toaster, your fingers, your eyes, your nose, your shoes, the chair, okay? Most of the objects in your world do something, okay? Ngopo. Demba means exist truly. They really exist. Really. Dupa means exist. What do these guys go around saying? By the way, these poor guys are at the bottom of the pecking order. Okay? They are Buddhists, but they got it all wrong about emptiness. Okay? They're down here. There were four great schools of Buddhism in ancient India. The Abhidharma schools, which we call detailists, the logic schools, which are called sutrists, and then the mind-only school, and then the middle way school. Okay? The three bottom schools all together are called Lopo Mawa. Okay, the three lower schools, they all get dumped together as functionalists. Why this big name? What do they believe? It's very simple. They say, look, don't tell me this camera's not real. It does something. Okay, it works. Okay, anything that works is real. So why do you guys go around talking about emptiness, things are not real, things are like an illusion? What are you talking about? What do you tell me this camera's not real? You know, he turns it on, it does something, and then we have a video tape comes out of it. It does something. It works. So why are you telling me it's not real? They say, basically, because things work, they must be real. Okay? And that's a wrong idea. Okay? Now why, we gotta talk about it. Okay? Why is a different thing. But they say, come on you Majjhimika guys, come on you emptiness guys, it works, What do you mean it doesn't real? You emptiness guys, you middleway school, you Majamika guys, you go stand out in front of a New York cab, you know, a functional entity, a thing that does something that you say is unreal, and see if it runs you over or not. And then, you know, when you get out of the hospital, come back and tell me that it's not real, you know. They said it. Because you can get to point A and point B in a New York taxi cab, and because it can smash your legs if it runs into you, it's real. Okay? It sounds reasonable, right? I mean, they are Buddhists and they're not stupid. Okay? I mean, it's a very profound school, the mind-only school. Mainly, this is the mind-only school. Gyaltsev Jay and Master Shantideva spend a lot of the ninth chapter, trying to explain why they're wrong. But it sounds good, doesn't it? I mean, be honest. You can pretend to be a Majjhimika. But, you know, Kedup Jay would say, tell me in 5 minutes or less, you know, why they're wrong, and I'll give you a medal, you know. You can't. You know. Why is it wrong to say, the thing works, so it's real? You know. It seems pretty reasonable. So they're called the Thing Works School, okay? Lupamawa, all right? Really, you can call them functionalists if you want to make a university-length word. But it just means these guys say if the thing does something, it's real, okay? Yeah. Say again. Oh, the Ra means as being true. You see, now we see that this little Ra here stands for Dambar. Those of you who care about the Tibetan, okay? That little R translates to Dambar. Okay? And that's not very obvious, and you would have trouble with that if you didn't know Tibetan well and you didn't have good training about it, okay? Do they just assert the existence of things that work? No. They assert that things that work are real. And sounds good to me. Okay. By the way, I'll write the names of the three schools in English, okay? It would be the... I like to call them detailists. Which, if you know, it's the Abhidharma schools. Okay. School number one, lowest school, which is called Chedatmawa in Tibetan and Vaibhashika in Sanskrit. Sutrists. This is not on your homework, it's just for your FYI, for your information. I had a student who asked me to give them 3 words a day, and I had all these FYIs that came out to like 19 words a day. But anyway, sutrists means Dodepa, means Sautrantika, which is not the same as Svatantrika, which has nothing to do with Tantra, okay? And that's school number two. And then the mind only. These three schools together are called the guys who think that things that work must be real. Sounds okay to me, right? All right. Maybe that's a good place to give you a break so you can think about it. If those cookies and stuff are real, when they fill your stomach, you know? I mean, they perform a function, right? So, I'm serious. When you're eating them and drinking the functional refreshments there, think about whether they're real or not and get back to me when you come back in about 10 minutes. I have a couple other announcements. We have a correspondence course where tapes of these courses and notebooks are sent out to, I think they've sent out 10,000 tapes already. We have a lot of prisoners who take them. It's the only thing they can do, you know, and they go through them really well. We have people in many foreign countries taking them. And we always need more people to help grade papers. It's a really fun and it's really good for improving your own knowledge. Like if you're a grader for about 6 months, you get to review everything you ever learned. And it's really good. And then a lot of times you get into some very sweet correspondence with the person or stuff like that. And then I go to Alaska and teach a course, and then there's always three people that come up to me and say, you know, do you know John Stillwell, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you know. And then, I mean, I've often had it happen, people come up and start crying because it was so valuable to them. So please help if you can. We're kind of overloaded. The people who are doing it are kind of overwhelmed. So even if you could take one or two people, they don't send them in much. And they don't send them in on time, so it's not that much of a commitment, okay? See Mary, raise your hand, yeah? If you can help out, okay? All right? Yeah. Yeah, Mary says to remind you that to be a grader, you have to have completed two of these courses, okay? I also wanted to mention, I was kind of a tough guy about attendance here, and that still holds true. If you miss more than two classes or fail to do more than two homeworks or two quizzes, you have to leave the class. You're welcome to come back on Friday night class. Can you audit the class? No, there's no auditing of this class. Can you visit the class? Yes, up to two times per course, okay? You can visit, but you can't audit it, okay? Can you bring your mom to class?
Yes.
More than two times? No. Okay? No, seriously, if you want to bring a friend, you're welcome. If you meet someone who wants to see what the class is like, they're welcome to drop in once or twice, but no more than that, because it detracts from the other people's study. And anyone who has to, you know, if you get sick or something happens and you have to miss more than two classes, then please do come on Friday night. It's not like a punishment. Friday night's a neat course. You learn most of this stuff. And it's just designed for people who cannot make this commitment. But if you're in this room now, it means you made the commitment, okay? And you cannot come unless you're actually doing all the homeworks and the quizzes and things like that, okay? If you can't do it, then you're welcome to come on Friday, and please do come on Friday. Same place, same subject, much mushier. Okay.
Two more lifetimes.
Cool. He said two more lifetimes. Okay. What's the opposite of a Ngopomawa? What's the opposite of these three lower schools who say, oh, anything that works is real? The opposite of them is called, I'm going to write it here. Okay, forget, I'm going to write it right here. It didn't get on the transparency. Say umapa.
Umapa.
Umapa. Umapa means Madhyamika, means middle way school. Middle way. Middle way. Middle way between what? Halfway between what and what? Halfway between the two wrong ideas of thinking either nothing exists or everything exists the way you thought it did. Okay? They're halfway between those two ideas. I'll state them again. They're halfway between the wrong idea that nothing exists at all and the other wrong idea of thinking that everything exists the way you thought it did or the way it looks. Okay? They're in the middle of those two ideas. Well, what do they believe? It's right here. This is very important. Say chu. Did anybody write it yet? If you didn't write it, write it, okay? Now we're talking about this line right here. Scratch this. Say chu. Tam che. Rang shing ki. Madhuba. Okay, chu means dharma, means thing. Okay, thing. Dharma. Existing thing. Okay? Tamche means all of them. And since this sentence is a negative sentence, we can say none of them. Okay? No thing in the world, no thing in the universe so far, okay? Che Tamche. Rang Shingi Madrupa means has any nature of its own. Nothing in the universe has any nature of its own. No object in the universe has any nature of its own. Rangshin means nature. Madhupa means they don't have in this case. Okay? No object in the universe has any nature of its own. What does that mean? Okay? What does that mean? We got two people gonna punch it out in the next few weeks, okay? Who are they? These people who say, if it wakes, it's real. And these people who say, nothing in the universe has any nature of its own. And somehow there's a big fight between them, okay? Somehow they're saying the opposite thing. They're saying things are not real the way you thought they were, although they do exist. And these people are saying things are real because they work. And there's going to be this big shootout between these two parties, okay? These are Ngopo Mawas. These are the people who say things that work really exist. And then these people here who say nothing has any nature of its own. What's that mean? Nothing has any nature of its own. Let's go back to the pot. You're standing there watching the pot. Okay? You're standing there watching the pot. What are you really looking at? Some colors and shapes. Your eye cannot see pot. Your eye only sees colors and shapes. That's what the eyeball does. Okay? That's the job of the eyeball. What do the hands do? They can feel the hardness of the steel. They can feel the roundness, in a sense. You know what I mean? They can feel the plastic handle. But they can't tell it's a handle. That takes the mind. The mind has to interpret it. Okay? So your eye, all the eye can pick up is colors and shapes. Okay? That's all the mind, the eye can do. So do those colors and shapes have a nature of being a pot? That's the $64,000 question. Okay? Do those colors and shapes, from their side only, have any nature of being anything like a pot? And the answer is no. Okay? No. Okay? They suggest pot. They hint pot. They are like indicating pot. But they are not pot. And those colors and those shapes don't have any color, any nature of being a pot themselves. Their potness comes from your mind. It's your mind that organizes those colors and shapes and says, oh, that's a pot. Let's call it a pot. Okay? They do not, from their side, have any nature of being a pot. The potness is being supplied from
your perception.
Your mind. What if you were a roach climbing up the stove at that very moment? Okay, I love roaches, you know. Rinpoche says they're my people. Okay. Okay, so this roach is climbing up the side of the stove. You know, he makes contact with the same colors and shapes, right? He's making contact with the same colors and shapes. But what he sees is a hell realm. You know, a vast floor of steel burning with redness. You know, if he happens to get thrown into that thing or walk on the edge of that thing, it's just like a hell realm. You know, hell realm, in the hells, the floor is made of steel and it's just red hot and you're just running with no place else to go. So for him, it's just a hell realm. Is it a pot for the roach? Does it function in any way as a pot for the roach? No. Is it the same colors and shapes? But his mind, or her mind, is interpreting the same colors and shapes in a different way, right? Like, for some reason, they're interpreting those colors and shapes as a horrible, insurmountable obstacle. Dangerous, life-threatening obstacle. And my mind is interpreting as the source of a nice, jolly, warm cup of tea. You know, for me it's like a pleasant thing, for them it's like the worst thing they can imagine. What is it in their mind that's making them see it that way? And what is it in my mind that makes me see it the other way? Karma. Okay? Karma. Your past deeds. Your past deeds. Okay? Your own, what you said in the past, what you thought in the past, what you did in the past, is absolutely dictating to you, is forcing you to organize these colors and shapes in a different way. You don't have any choice. Okay, you can stand there all day and say, this is a red-hot mountain hell floor, you know, but you can't experience it that way. And a roach can sit there all day and say, I'd like a nice cup of tea, but it's not going to happen. You know, your karma is merciless. Your karma is relentless. Your karma cannot be avoided. You know, your karma is calling the shots, and your karma in your mind says, today these colors and these shapes are going to be called pot. And you think of them as pot, and karma makes you have that image of pot in your mind. Okay? There is no nature of pot in those colors and shapes. There's no such thing as a pot. The way you used to think. Okay? It's very interesting. And when the pot tips over, you know, the roach is running for his life, this tidal wave now. You know? When the pot tips over, did a pot tip over on the stove? No. Your perceptions changed. Why? Your karma changed. Did you lose a cup of tea? Yes. Was the karma good or bad? Bad. Okay? Nothing tipped over out there. There is no pot that tipped over. Your karma screwed up. Like you started to make tea for somebody 20 years ago and then you changed your mind. Okay? Seriously. It's very profound. Those things don't exist out there. They do not have a nature of their own. The Madhyamika, the middle way people are right. And things are not real the way you thought they were. And these guys, where were they? These guys are wrong. Okay. Oh, which one were they? Anyway, the people who say because things work, they're real, were wrong. Okay. Does a pot work? Yes. Is it real in the sense that you can get a cup of tea out of it? Yes. But is it real the way you thought it was? No. Is it necessarily a pot from its side? No. Why not? Roach. Okay? You have to get used to that. You have to get used to that. If you understand this thing, and you understand emptiness, you can reach nirvana. And if you don't understand it, you can't reach nirvana. So you got to work hard on that. Okay? I'll say it again. Middle ways, these are the big shootout that's going to happen in the next few weeks. These people say, who was over here? Middle way people? I forget. Okay. Left is better. Middleway people were saying that thing doesn't have any nature of being a pot from its side. It's just a bunch of colors and shapes. It's your mind that organizes it. Oh, well, I'll just organize it as nectar of the gods. Sorry, forced on you by karma. You know, the way it's organized is forced on you by your past karma. That's why you want to do good karma. Okay? Which makes sense. The Buddha spent half his life talking about doing good things for other people. He spent the other half of his life talking about emptiness. I wonder if there's a connection. Duh. Okay? You know what I mean? Okay? Really. Because things are empty, you must do good deeds. You must help other people. And then over here is the people who say, because it works, it must be real. These people say, no, because it works, it's unreal, and it's empty. And I can change it. Okay? If I change my karma. Very profound. Okay, that's going to be the fight. You've got to get used to it. All right? Yeah.
So, in the case where you see a pot, when you see your perception is of a pot tipping over on a stove, you know, you're taking the data which is out there. Would it be accurate to say that the data has changed or that the data doesn't change, only your perception?
John asked if the... I think what John is asking is, when the pot tips over, do the colors and shapes change?
Whatever's out there doesn't change.
Whatever's out there. It's a very profound question. We're going to get to it. It's called the emptiness of the parts of the parts. Okay? And we'll get there. The basic answer, just so you're happy about it, is that as soon as you're focusing on the parts, when you go down one level, it's again your mind interpreting the parts from parts of the parts. And it's endless. Okay? But we have a lot of blank stares on that one. Okay. Yeah. Does the data change self-existently from its side, whether or not... No. And how does that happen? We'll get into it. Okay? It's as empty as the pot. The colors and shapes of the pot are as empty as the pot.
Is the whole concept of something out there changing, is that self-existent, the concept?
The Buddha would say, no answer. Because you started with a falsity. You said something out there.
But there is something.
The Buddha had 14 questions he refused to answer. Because everybody started out with, that's something out there. He said, oh, I don't want to hear about it. You know? Okay, be careful. Emptiness is like a greased pig, okay?
Yeah. Give an example of the small roach.
A small roach, okay. The other one.
Yeah. And a person, okay.
to explain the notion of emptiness in the pot. Okay. Wouldn't it be more plausible for the Western mind to explain it in terms of quantum theory or physics or whatever and say that that pot, the electrons and protons and that, all that sort of thing, and that's for that reason it's a more plausible explanation than a Roche sees it this way?
She said, why not get into electron physics rather than talk about roaches and humans? You know, I've read physics books that said you're never stepping on the floor. You never touch the floor. Seriously. You know, you never make contact with any reality there and stuff like that. That's true. But they don't go the extra step of explaining why am I seeing the floor. You know, admitted that it's just a bunch of atoms. They don't go the extra step of saying why am I experiencing those random atoms as a floor, which is karma. You have to bring in karma. That's where Western science falls down. Okay. Yeah, I agree the AIDS is caused by a certain virus. But why did that virus happen? You know, when why me? You know. I'm going to go on just a bit. And if you're really serious, we'll do it after class, okay? So that people who need to go can go. Because we got a lot to go, all right? We're like on the second question or something. I shouldn't depress you, maybe. Okay. So you can kind of see that people who have the viewpoint of the Madhyamika are going to get to be Aryas. See? They're going to see emptiness. And the people who have the viewpoint of those other guys are going to stay social kilos for a while. They're going to be regular people for a while. As long as you hold that, their viewpoint, that everything is just the way it looks like, you're not going to get there. You have to go over to the Madhyamika. You have to go to middle way. You have to start seeing this thing doesn't exist out there the way it seems. Something else is going on. It may take you a while and a few hours of these classes to figure out what's going on. But at least get ready to become a Madhyamika. Okay? Say to yourself, something's going on. You know, I have to figure out how things work. You know, why is my life so crappy? You know, why is it that no matter what kind of exercise I get, and no matter how I rearrange my occupation, and no matter how many spouses I go through, I just can't find happiness. You know what I mean? Why is that? You know, I don't understand how to make things happen. You know, what really causes dollars? What is the true cause of dollars? Like everyone in the world, in America, in New York City, is seeking the true cause of dollars. You know, is it working hard? No, lazy people get rich sometimes. Is it being smart? No, stupid people get rich sometimes. Well, is it being risky with your investments? No, cautious people get rich sometimes. Well, then it's being cautious. No, risky people get rich sometimes. No, it should be being nice. No, but nice people are lots of poor, nice students in this class, you know? And so what is it that makes money? You know, what is the real cause of things? You haven't figured it out yet. It's deeply related to emptiness, okay? That's why we're here. We're not just talking about emptiness because it sounds like cool to talk about it while you're dying and getting old, you know? It's not that. It has profound effects on your life. When you figure out emptiness, you can pretty much make whatever you want happen. And that's cool. You see what I mean? That would be very interesting. You know, you could finally get all those things you really wanted. You know? So we'll talk about it. Okay. Let me see if I did all the homework questions. There's a couple of easy homework questions after that. That's a hard one. Did that. Transparency? No? I actually have to write something, I guess. Oh. That looks good. I told you I was going to bust your buns. There you go. Copy that. There was a lady in New Jersey, her grader was, should I tell him, Andy? No. she demanded her certificate, even though she had done none of the work. And you got to work for it, okay? Okay, punch out starts now, the shootout between the two schools, okay? It's the three lower schools against the higher school. It's 3-1. Okay? Not very fair. These guys believe if something wakes, it must be real. These guys say nothing has any nature of its own. And that's a big fight. These guys make the opening salvo. Okay? These guys take the first shot. They swing the first punch. What's the first punch? It's right here. Lupo means things that do something, right? Lupo means a pen, your shoes, car, house, your nose, things that do something. Rangshingi Mena means if they don't have any nature of their own, if they don't have any nature of their own, Ye Me De Gyur means they must not exist at all. Ye Me De Gyur means they must not exist at all. This is their first punch. Okay? This is their first attack. I'll say it again. If things don't have any nature of their own, then they can't exist at all. Okay. If that white color, silvery color, and the round shape, and the black thing don't have any partness about them, then they must not exist at all. There must be no part at all. Okay. You gotta cook it, all right? As Rinpoche would say, all right? I'll state it again. They're complaining to the middleweight guys. They're saying, look, if those colors don't have anything pot about them from their side, without me thinking anything, then no pot exists at all. Okay? Then there's no pot at all. Which is wrong, okay? Is there a pot the way you thought it used to be, the way you used to think it was? No. Is there a pot out there on its own side? No. Are those round colors, round shape, white color, black thing, are they pot from their side? No. If there were, the roach would be having a cup of tea. Okay? So are they non-existent at all? Is there no pot at all? Of course there's a pot. I'm making tea. I'm going to drink the tea. Okay? Where is the pot? It's a bunch of colors that my mind is organizing in a certain way. And that's fine, I can use that. It works. That's the important thing. That's the whole lesson tonight, okay? Does the thing exist the way you thought it did? No. Does it exist out there on the stove by itself? No. Does it exist without me organizing in a certain way? No. So it doesn't exist at all, right? No, stupid, I'm making a cup of tea. I've been drinking tea a lot, you know. It must work. I'm evidence of it. You know, I got these yellow teeth from drinking Tibetan tea my whole life, you know. It's proof that there's Tibetan tea. It's proof that I drank it, you know. It must exist. It must have some existence, you know. It does. It does have existence. Is it the way you thought it was? No. Does it have a nature of its own? No. Well, does it have a nature of being forced on you by your karma and makes you see this thing as a pot? Yes. Can you make tea with that? Of course. Okay, no problem. Okay. But they make the mistake of saying, if it doesn't exist from its side as a pot, it can't be a pot. And we say, that's stupid. We've been drinking tea all these years. Okay, that's their first mistake. Second mistake, Yuna. Xing means and, by the way. Yuna means if it existed, if the pot exists. Yuna, if the pot exists, Rangshingi Yuga, it must have a nature. It must have a nature. So there's two different punches. They're doing, I don't know what you call it. You know, like a jab and a hook, you know? First they try a jab and then they try a hook. What was the jab? The jab was, if it doesn't have a nature, it can't exist at all. And then the hook is, If it, and then we say, come on, it exists. So they say, oh, then it must have a nature, right? And we say, no. Okay, that's their two shots. They take two shots at the Majjhimika. First one, if it doesn't have a nature, it can't exist at all. Come on, stupid, what do you think we're drinking? Well, if it exists, then it must have a nature of its own. Oh, well, so I guess every bug that crawls on the stove is having a cup of tea. Okay? And that's all. Okay, those are the two big mistakes they make. All the other debate that we're going to have tonight and the rest of the class is based on this stupid idea. So you got to appreciate this one and you have to learn it, and it's a little bit long and don't worry about it. It makes all the other ones shorter. Okay? What's the two stupid ideas that they have? If it doesn't have a nature of being a pot from its own side, it can't exist at all. Wrong, I've been drinking out of it all these years. Well, then if it does exist, it must have a nature of its own. No, it doesn't. If it had its own nature of being a pot, then every kind of being that entered this room would have to enjoy it and use it exactly the way a human does, which is not true. Okay? That's all. By the way, that's proof that it doesn't have any potness about it. That a roach can't use it as a pot. Okay? Frankly, but you got to get used to that. All right? What's that got to do with me? I don't care whether it really has its own nature or not. All I want is a cup of tea. Why should I come to these bullshit classes? You're talking about whether or not it has its own nature. I've been using it to have tea all this time. No problem. Why are you getting into all this stuff? It's very profound. It's very profound. I can teach you the method to see that stuff as the nectar of immortality forever, because it's empty. If it had a nature of its own, if it was tea from its own side, we're stuck in this shitty reality. Okay? But because it's empty, if you improve your karma by learning what's good deeds or bad deeds, and taking all these vows, tantric vows, bodhisattva vows, and keeping a nice book about them, then because that thing doesn't have a nature of being a pot of tea, it will turn into a pot of the nectar of immortality. Seriously, no joke. Okay, if it had its own nature, this is not possible. But because it doesn't have its own nature, everything's possible. Everyone in this room can enter a Buddha paradise in this lifetime, which is cool. Okay, that's why we're talking about emptiness. Emptiness is not just some like mental masturbation. Okay, it has a point that if you understand emptiness, then you can manipulate your reality and you can create a Buddha paradise. And that would be amazing. And you can't even dream what it's like. You can't even dream right now what it would be like, you know. If you really did all this stuff, if you really kept your bodhisattva vows and your monk's vows and your tantric vows perfectly or pretty good, you know, and keep your book during the day and do all this meditation stuff, then you can't even imagine what it would be like to enter that reality, you know. You can't even picture it now. You can't even guess what it would be like, what would be in the pot, you know. You can't now imagine it. Okay, what would happen and how your life would be. But it's all possible because this thing is empty. So you have to study emptiness. You have to understand its emptiness. It has every... It must be from Brooklyn or something. Okay, sorry, Dilma, wherever you are. If it wakes, it's real, you know? And then these people over here say, no, it doesn't have any nature of its own. It's unreal. It's illusory. Okay? But leave it like that. Okay? So that's question number five. The question number five is kind of fuzzy. Just answer it like this, you know? It says, explain why good and bad deeds are like an illusion, but they still function perfectly well. It means that, okay, when you come up here and make offerings to the Buddhas and you put out water bowls, okay, is everything there, is it a water bowl from its own side? No. Okay, when you wrap up a nice gift for your mom on Mother's Day and present it to her, which is extremely powerful karma, good karma, and give it to her, is that a pleasant gift from its own side? No. She might find it repulsive. Okay, seriously. It doesn't have any nature of its own. Okay? So how can something like that get you to nirvana? You know, how can you have a good deeds from from things that don't have any nature of their own. You know, you're offering something to something, something to somebody that doesn't have any nature of its own. How can it be? How can it give you good karma to offer something that doesn't have any nature of its own? This school is trying to take another. It's like an uppercut, okay? Like, I don't know. They had a jab and then they had a, I don't know, a hook, right? Now they're going this way. You know, you Madhyamika people, how the hell are you going to get to Buddhahood? You're offering things that don't have any nature. You know, when you're offering these nice water bowls and you're offering these nice candles and these flowers, they don't even have any nature of being a flower. So how can you get good karma out of it? That's a little tough, okay? But your mind is perceiving it as a flower. Your mind is forcing you to see those colors as a flower. And that's good enough. It works. Okay? And if you offer that thing that's giving you a picture of a flower in your mind, you do collect good karma. And by the way, you never did anything else. Okay? That's all that ever was happening. Master Shantideva says, and Gyaltsep Jay says, by the way, they work just as good as they did before I told you about all this stuff. Think of it that way. He says, when you offer a flower, when you offered a flower before this class happened, and you thought, I'm going to get some good karma out of this, well, what you thought was going to happen is exactly what does happen. But it don't happen for the reason that you thought. Okay. So Gyaltsep Jay's answer and Master Shantideva's answer at this point is, good karma works just the way you thought it did, but not for the reason you thought it did. Okay. And you got to cook it, okay? You got to cook it. That's why you can offer a flower that's not a flower from its own side, and you still get good karma out of it. In fact, I should rather say, it's only because it has no nature that you can get good karma out of it. And you got to cook that. It's only because it's not a flower from its own side that you can get good karma from it. You got to think about it. Okay? You got to think about it. Are flowers pleasant? Ask Ken Rinpoche. You know, you get a bunch of flowers near him, he can't breathe. He's got this allergies to flowers. To him, a flower is a very unpleasant object. People offer him flowers all the time, you know. He's like, yeah, thanks, could you take it over here? You know? Right? It's not self-existent. It doesn't have a nature of being pleasant on its own. Okay? If it had a nature of being pleasant, everybody would find it pleasant. The pleasantness is not coming from the flower. It's coming from your mind. Well, let's think of everything as pleasant. I have to go to the dentist like next week. I'll just think of it as pleasant, you know. It don't work that way. It's forced on you by your past karma. Okay? It is imputed. It is made up by your mind. But you don't have a choice right now. You can set the good karma in motion now and eat your dessert later. But you can't do it on the moment. Okay? Next question. They're taking another punch, okay? I don't know, what do you call this? I don't know if there's a word for it. Maybe they're just kicking him, okay? Low blow, okay? They say, hey Gyaltsep Jay, you know, hey Master Shantideva, if beings, if you and me are like an illusion, you know, if you and me have no nature of being Michael Roach or Winston or Tesla or anything else, how can you take rebirth? Who's taking rebirth? You know, there must not be any rebirth. If I'm not Michael Roach from my side, you know, then who takes rebirth? So Gyaltsep Jay says, listen, let's talk about it. Let's talk about, I don't know, we'll pick on somebody. Brooks. Anyway, is he himself from his own side? No. Is he being forced by his mind to see those colors and shapes as himself? Yes. Am I being forced to see the same thing? Yes. Okay? Can that person that we're being forced to see that way take rebirth and become another person that we're being forced to see that way? Of course, no problem. Okay? So he says, what are you talking about rebirth? What's the big problem about rebirth? Rebirth is the mind shifting. You don't take rebirth. There's nothing out there taking rebirth. Colors and shapes are being interpreted by the mind as a change to another body. This arm with different karma, I could see as an antenna. Okay? It's not that the arm changed into an antenna. My karma shifted and my perceptions shifted, and I'm forced to see the same colors and shapes as an antenna. It's very interesting. You don't take a rebirth. Your mind goes through the thoughts of a rebirth, which is the same thing as taking a rebirth. Okay? So I don't have to do the Heart Sutra. That's the whole thing, okay? You don't take a rebirth. Your mind sees yourself taking a rebirth, and so you do take a rebirth. You see what I mean? That's what taking a rebirth is. It's just shifts in your perceptions. Okay? So Gyaltabjaya says, get this. If you can be forced by your karma to see yourself as a human sitting here right now, then what's the big deal about being forced to see yourself as a different being 100 years from now? What's the big deal? Why do you have a problem with rebirth? You know, if you understand what I'm saying about you now, it applies to the other guy. It's the same thing. He's just farther down the road. Okay. And Gyaltabjaya gives an example. Okay. In India, if you've ever been in India and seen them do their magic, it's pretty amazing. They have what they call a deshing. Okay. Deshing means it's a little stick like that. And they say, these people crowd around. You always know there's a magician in town in a village in India because there's a big crowd. And you like, got to force your way in, you know. And in the middle, there's some guy, and he's making, like, phallic jokes about the deshing and stuff. And then he says, okay, watch this deshing. And he throws it on the ground, and suddenly you see a horse. You know. And it's like an illusion. It's like some amazing thing that they do, you know. Because he set it up in your mind, they do certain things in your mind, you see some kind of animal or something. And then he like, snaps his fingers, and then there's just a stick there. You know, this is a thing that they can do. It's pretty cool. Does that horse have a mind? No. Is it a living being? No. It's just an illusion that you have. Okay. So Gyaltabjaya says, well, you think it's such a big deal? You're asking a stupid question. How could a person who's empty, who has no nature, take a rebirth? That's like asking, how come the stick can't be a cow? Okay, you gotta cook it, all right? The guy could have made a cow if he wants to make a cow. He will make a cow later on. Okay? The same colors and shapes with different kinds of karma you could see as another person later. No problem. The same stick can have the illusion of being a horse and of being a cow. No problem. You got to cook it. Okay? That's his answer. The basic point is this. Anything that can happen once can happen twice in a different format. Okay? It's all right. It's all right. You can take rebirth. You will take rebirth, unless you get out now. Yeah, quick.
How do you explain
Bardo? Bardo, same thing, exactly same thing. You're asking me, can I make it a donkey? Come on.
Okay.
Huh? It's another shift, of course. Everything's another shift. Everything's another shift. Nothing exists. Okay. Last thing. Okay. Yeah. Have I ever personally seen it happen? I've seen them do amazing things. I've never seen them, to be honest, I've never seen them throw a stick down and see an elephant. But I've seen them do things that you couldn't believe, you know. Yeah, well, I guess in the ancient days the magicians were better or something. Yeah, it doesn't mean that that particular magic trick has to exist for this to be a good argument. It's any kind of illusion. You can say a movie, and it's the same thing. A movie is really just a lot of shapes and colors. It's a bunch of actors acting like the Dalai Lama, and you know, if you saw 7 years in Tibet, it's an illusion. You know, they paid these guys $70 million and came out with this illusion. You know, it's not real. That's the same thing. It's the same example. They could have been playing Civil War characters. You see, Shantideva says, you know, don't ask me stupid questions. You know, why is it? Could these same characters play another role? Of course, given different costumes, different conditions, meaning different karma from your mind, of course they could have been Civil War movie, you know, and they probably will play a Civil War movie next year, you know. That's no problem. If you can accept that 7 years in Tibet is an illusion, in the sense that it's not the real attack of Tibet, it's players playing it, actors playing it. If you can accept that about the present movie, then why are you giving me a hard time about next year's movie? You know, why are you making this big deal about reincarnation? Of course there'll be another being there. Of course those same actors will play another play, and it will be just as unreal as the ones playing today. Why is it unreal? Because they don't have a nature of being the Dalai Lama and his friends. Okay? It's being supplied by the by the guy, by the director, and by the advertising and by the costumes and everything else. But they are not the Dalai Lama and his friends. It's the same thing, okay? It's the conditions which are creating the illusion of the Dalai Lama and his friends. But nobody would say, oh, that's the Dalai Lama, you know. Okay? Same thing. Is the pot a pot from its own sign? Oh, is the guy who plays the Dalai Lama? Same question. No. Does he look like the Dalai Lama? Yes. Why? Well, him, because he's got the right costume and the right hairdo and everything else. Or lack of hairdo. And the other guy, and the pot, why? Because my karma is supplying all this stuff. My karma is forcing me to see these pictures, these colors and shapes as a... But what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't matter that people don't do that nowadays. It's just an example for an illusion. They also use the example of a dream or a drama, you know, a theater, a theatrical performance. It doesn't matter. Just any kind of example to show the idea of an illusion. And 7 years in Tibet's a good example. Okay, same thing. Okay, last question. Ooh. This is the last point. I'll get you home before 9... Oh, out of here by 9:30, okay? It looks like emptiness classes take half an hour longer, even though they have no nature of their own. Say, Rang Xingyi. Nyangde. Rang Xingyi. Nyangde. This Rang Xin also means nature, okay? Nature. Here it means natural. Rang Xingyi means natural. Nyangde means nirvana. It's the Tibetan word for nirvana. Rang Xingyi Nyangde. It's called natural nirvana. The first thing you have to say about natural nirvana is that it's not nirvana. Okay. By the way, this nature and the other nature are totally different, okay? When I say, does a pot have a nature of its own, you have to say, no. But this is the nature like in natural beauty or natural trees or something like that. Okay, it's a different natural, all right? Don't get confused. This Rang Xin means natural. Natural nirvana. It's the nirvana that all things have already. Okay? It's the nirvana that all things have already. I saw this wrong view repeated in a magazine today. Like another magazine about Buddhism came out today and it said, it was some stupid idea. What was it? Oh, we're all Buddhas and we just have to uncover it, you know. It's not true. Okay, we all do have a Buddha nature and you have to develop it or you have to utilize it, but that's another story. Natural nirvana is the same thing. Natural nirvana is defined as the emptiness of all objects. Okay? It's right here. I'm going to cut this. Okay? Cha means thing here. Dharma, thing. Tam Che means all. Tam Che means all. Rang Xingyi Tongpa means they are void of any nature of their own. They don't have any nature of their own. That's a synonym for emptiness. That's what emptiness means. Okay? The emptiness of everything in this room. The fact that nothing in this room has any nature of its own. By the way, everything you're looking at is just a bunch of colors and shapes. Why are you seeing Marvin and the rest of us? Your karma. Good or bad? Well, are you enjoying it or not? Okay, are you enjoying it or not? If you're enjoying it, it's a result of good karma. If you're not enjoying it, it's a result of bad karma. If you don't care much about it, it's a result of some kind of dim ignorance in your past. Okay, it's called neutral karma. Okay. So there's a thing called natural nirvana. Every object has it. It's the fact that that particular object doesn't have any nature of its own. And that's its natural nirvana. Okay, that's a little tricky. The emptiness of each object in this room is called natural nirvana. Is it nirvana? What is nirvana? It's getting rid of all your bad emotions forever. All your negative emotions forever. That's nirvana. Does that chair have nirvana? No, I mean, it never had any bad emotions anyway. Like, congratulations, you know? You overcame, you got nirvana because you don't have any bad emotions anymore. It's not like that, okay? Never had it, never will have it. It's a piece of wood, okay? Does it have natural nirvana? Yes. Why? It's empty. It has emptiness. Is its natural nirvana in any way a kind of nirvana? No. Why? Because it never had a mind, it never had a dirty mind, it never had to work with Buddhist practice, meditation, studying, thinking, going to all these stupid classes to get rid of his anger, okay? He didn't have to do that, because he never had any. So he can't reach nirvana. So does he have nirvana? No. Could he ever have nirvana? No. Does he have natural nirvana? Yes, because that's a totally different thing called emptiness. Why did I bring this up? Okay. It happens to be the next thing in the text, okay? And here, these guys, the functionalists, are doing a really dirty trick on Shantideva, on Master Shantideva. They're like trying to trip him when he's walking back to his corner or something, okay? It's like they're trying to push him. He's already walking back. The Madhyamika is already walking back to their corner, and this guy comes up and punches him in the back, okay? With this low, stupid blow, you know? Oh, you Madhyamika guys, you think the Buddha is still suffering. Okay, you think the Buddha is still suffering. And the Madhyamika guy, you know, he's like, you know, what are you talking about? He says, because you think the Buddha, how to say it, is still in samsara, is still in the cycle of suffering. You think the Buddha is still in the world of suffering. And the Madhyamika guy goes, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. And they say, well, because you think that nirvana and samsara are the same thing. You know, you think that this world in which you and I have to put up with our lousy bosses and our lousy New York City negative things and other stuff, you think that's nirvana. So you think the Buddha is still wandering around in New York, having to get on dirty subways, you know, having people push him on the sidewalk, having to see bad things happen, having people yell at him, like you blanking Moses as I got on the way. You know, you say the Buddha is still wandering around New York City like that. Well, why do you say that? Because you say that samsara and nirvana are all mixed up together. And Madhyamika says, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, and he says, yes, you do, because you think samsara has natural nirvana. Okay? You think that all the suffering in the world has natural nirvana, right? It's just a low blow, right? Natural nirvana has got nothing to do with nirvana. Natural nirvana is what? Emptiness. Does suffering have natural nirvana? It better, or else we can't change it, okay? It better have emptiness, or else we're in trouble, okay? So he's purposely cheating. It's like a low blow. He's cheating. He's saying, you think that suffering and nirvana are mixed up. Why do you say that? Because you think that suffering has its own emptiness. Of course we think suffering has its own emptiness, or you couldn't change it into the pleasure of a Buddha paradise. Well, then you think suffering has its own nirvana, right? No, I didn't say anything like that. Well, isn't emptiness natural nirvana? Okay, he's just mixing, he's just, what is it, semantic thing, okay? We call emptiness natural nirvana. And of course, everything has natural nirvana. You know, like getting the flu has natural nirvana. That doesn't mean that everyone who ever entered nirvana has the flu. All right, that's all. Flu has its own emptiness. So the flu has its natural nirvana. But that doesn't mean that every dude who's wandering around in nirvana has the flu. Okay? And that's just a game that they're playing. They're trying one last desperate thing, which you do see in the debate ground in the monastery, you know? Like you're walking away and the guy got demolished, you know, and he's like, yeah, but, you know, and he comes up with some stupid thing, you know? This is like the last gasp of this school for tonight. Okay? That's their last argument. Let me see if anything else. By the way, this is the other kind of nirvana, and you should know its proper name. And then we're done. Then you will have the projection of leaving, okay? Say lobur. Namda. Ki. Nyangde. Lobur. Namda. Ki. Nyangde. This is the real nirvana, okay? This is like the nirvana that we usually talk about, okay? Lobur is a very unusual word. Lobur normally means suddenly, okay? It normally means suddenly. Here it means through some kind of circumstances. What circumstances? You practice your ass off, okay? That's the lobur here. You worked really hard. That's the lobur. You know, something's going to happen, but only because you worked at the path for a long time. It's called Lam Komba. You know, you worked at the path for a long time. So something is going to happen. Lobur. Lobur means it wasn't that way before, and now it changed. By the way, what about the other kind of nirvana? That natural nirvana. Is it Lobur? Was it one way before and then got a different way? Forget it. Emptiness has always been emptiness. Does it get more or less empty? No. I mean, you're either empty or not. Okay? Is there a two-headed, six-foot, pink, full-sized elephant in this room? No. Could it be 60% not in this room? No. It just never was, okay? Emptiness is the same, okay? There never was a pot that had a nature of its own. And there never has been and there never will be. So that's 100% empty all the time. Okay? But there's another kind of nirvana where you're getting rid of your mental afflictions. Did you have them before? Yes. Did you get rid of them later? Yes. If there's a change. That's Lobur. Okay? Lobur means that. Okay? Namdak means purity. Purity. Is there a kind of purity to emptiness? Yes. In what way is it pure? It's pure of that non-existent, self-existent pot. The pot that never was. It's pure in that sense. What are we talking about here? What kind of purity are we talking about here? Of your mental afflictions. No more anger. No more jealousy. No more hatred. No more being upset. In a little tiny bit being upset. Nothing. Perfectly happy all the time. Okay? Namdak, pure. Namdak in Nyangde means nirvana. Okay? Nirvana where you are pure because you worked at it. And that's a description of the other kind of nirvana. Okay? Are there any masochists here? It is the village after all. I'm going to put up the full description of that, okay? It's on your homework, forget it, okay? You don't have to do it. I'll put it up here, Tibetan people can do it. Put the general description on your homework. What's the homework say? Describe it briefly, okay? Describe the second kind of nirvana briefly. That's okay. It's the permanent ending of your mental afflictions. Why? Because you saw emptiness directly. That's part of the definition of nirvana. You stopped your mental afflictions permanently because you were able to see emptiness directly. How long? 20 minutes. That's a very important 20 minutes to get to, okay? The full thing is here for those monks over there and people like that. Okay? And I'm not going to ask you to put that on your homework, okay? For your information, it says, Kechi Gyungi Korwa Korwa means you have been circling around in this kind of life, being born and dying in an endless stream. Chepa Le Topge. This kind of nirvana comes from cutting off that stream. Okay? Lam Kombale Chungwen Nyomong Kichima Dan Lobur Dutowen Nyangde. This is a kind of nirvana that you get by practicing the path and by suddenly or at some point getting rid of your mental afflictions forever. Okay? I mean, that's the full description of nirvana. Everybody's eyes are glazed over. You don't have to memorize that. Okay. All right. So what do we have so far? We got these two ideas about existence. These guys say, if it works, it must be real. These guys say, come on, it doesn't have any nature of its own, and therefore everything is possible. We can reach a Buddha paradise. Therefore, every object can become paradisical, you know? And that's very profound, and that's the whole point of studying emptiness. How to turn that pot of water into the nectar of immortality, which it can become. It will become, okay? That's the whole point. So that the shootout is between these two guys. These people saying, no, if it works, it's real, and that's the only way it can ever be. A pot is a pot. It can only be a pot. You know, it could never be anything else. Okay? Pot is pot. It's out there. It's a pot. You can wish whatever you want. You can do whatever karma you want. You ain't going to change it. It's a pot. Okay? They think that. Because it works like a pot. For me. I mean, it's a real parochial view, right? It doesn't even account for roaches. And then these people are saying, it doesn't have any nature of its own, and therefore we can turn it into a Buddha paradise. Okay? How? Change your karma. Okay? Do good deeds. You know, help other people like that. Be compassionate. Okay? Like that. Okay. We'll go straight into the prayers.
This is the end of Class 2. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.